Canada is the second largest country in the world, yet they produce the 1% of the global wine production. Although its marginal climate, Canadian wine industry spans over 200 years. Only recently, Canada embraced the use of Vitis vinifera with great success. Lakes and body of water are essential to mitigate the climate and ensure their success of ripening of grapes. Wine historian Rod Phillips, author of The Wines of Canada, joins us today to tell us about the key dates for the development of Canadian wines, the region that are playing a major role on the national wine scene, and some controversial techniques that are used to produce ice wine in Quebec, as well as some of the new trends and techniques that producers are using in the country. Hi, I'm Matthias Carpazza, and this is the Looking Into Wine podcast. Wine and winemaking can be complex, but this podcast has a simple mission. We want to give you the skills and tools to harness your passion about wine. Through this series, we will shine a spotlight on some of the different regions, processes, and concepts that shape the fascinating world of wine. I hope you enjoy the show and your own journey, Looking Into Wine. Welcome to Rod Phillips, author of The Wines of Canada. He's a wine historian and wine writer. Welcome, Rod.
Thanks very much, Mattia. Nice to be here.
It's fascinating, the history of Canada, and you as a wine historian, so there are so many dates and so many information about the history. I don't think I've never taken as many notes on the dates of any other region in the world. So I wanted to ask a bit about these dates and see the key moments that happen in the Canadian wine industry. I think we could start from like the 1850s, then there was the first documented wineries. Where was that, and what was the idea?
Well, you know, wine was made probably back in the 1600s and 1700s in very, very small quantities, made from local grape varieties, from native grape varieties. Probably some of the missionaries made their own wine for religious purposes, but we don't really know about it. I mean, there are a few records, but it's not until about the 1850s that you can start talking about commercial wine production. Why? Nah, it's hard to say. I mean, I would say that probably there was a growing middle class in Canada. The cities were starting to become larger. Wine was being imported from Spain and from France and other places. And quite clearly, some entrepreneurs decided that it was possible to make wine in Canada that people could...
And it was in Ontario where they started the first wineries.
Yes, in Ontario. That's right. That's right. I mean, some of the early, very early wine was probably made in Quebec and in Nova Scotia, places like that. So this is in Ontario. Those are the first records. And they made the wine mainly using native grapes. Probably not very good.
Okay. And then we can jump into like about 100 years when you jump into the 1970s, where you start to see the shift from native hybrids into more of Vitis vinifera based wine in Canada. And that was sort of the beginning of the modern Canada wines.
Yes, I think, it went from native grapes and into hybrids and then to vinifera. But, you know, vinifera began very, very slowly, you know, in the 1970s. There's some Gamay, some Chardonnay, and some other varieties. But the real takeoff was in the 1990s. So, you know, it's just sort of a very slow, it's like an airplane, right? Just taxiing along the runway in the 1970s and 80s, and then began to take off sometime in the 1990s. Yeah.
Well, in the book it says that there was a bit of experimenting to see where they can plant Vitis viniferas, because it's a bit more delicate than the hybrids or the Lambrusca grapes. And it was in the 83 when there was the iconic first Canadian ice wine to be produced.
That's right.
And Canada has a bit of different approach to, a bit stricter regulation to ice wine than other country in the world.
It's quite strict regulations, and it's now codified in wine law that the grapes have to stay on the vine until the temperature goes down to -8, and then they can begin to pick. But there are some variations even in Canada, because in Quebec, in the rest of Canada, they leave the grapes on the vine to freeze, and then they harvest the grapes when they're frozen. But in Quebec, they cut the grapes and they put them in nets on top of the vines, so that they're still on the vines, but they're not on the vines in the same way.
Just next to it.
Yeah, it's a very debated subject, as you can imagine.
Yeah, I can imagine. And there is some of experimentation with different grape varieties coming up from Canada on ice.
That's right. Yeah, you want obviously the varieties. I mean, the grapes have to stay on the vine. They have to adhere to the vine for a long period. Sometimes the harvest isn't until January, and sometimes even later. So they've got to stay on the vine. They've got to be. They've got to survive the wind. They've got to survive birds, and that kind of thing. So the most common varieties that are used are Vidal. At least on Ontario, Vidal, and then Cabernet Franc and Riesling. But people have made ice wine from just about every grape variety you can imagine.
There's also some sparkling ice wine produced.
And sparkling ice wine. And
sparkling. We're going to speak about sparkling later, because there's some interesting sparkling coming out from Canada.
Yes, very much.
So continuing on the dates, I think the key date from the modern history of Canada was in 1988. There was two factors that came in. It was one of the free trade between Canada and US, and the establishment of the Vintners Quality Alliance.
Yes, the free trade. It was a free trade agreement with the United States, and it really opened up trade between the two countries. And the fear was that Canada would be swamped by wine from California. Cheap wine from California. And so there was a decision to try to improve the Canadian wine industry. And so the government made grants to help the wineries to pull up the mediocre vines and to replant with Vitis vinifera to raise the quality. So that was very important. And then the beginning of wine law, really, with the Vintners Quality Alliance, which is just in Ontario. There is another one in British Columbia, but it's called the British Columbia Vintners Quality Alliance. And so it's only these two provinces that have the VQA. And it's like an appellation law, and it's meant to regulate the percentage of the varieties in the wine, the appellation. And it also has a tasting panel to establish quality.
And that obviously helped in bringing up the quality and uniform. But you said in the book there's a bit of discrepancy between the different countries, and the laws is not really a law.
Right. It's like all appellation laws. It's there's a little bit of flexibility, and not everything that's labeled AOC is necessarily very good wine. And not everything that's labeled VQA is necessarily very good wine. And there's a real advantage commercially to having your wine certified as a VQA wine, because mm-hmm. in people's minds, it's a guarantee of quality. And a lot of restaurants like to have VQA. But I think it's been a bit of a shift away from that now, because a lot of wineries in British Columbia just don't bother to have their wine certified VQA. And now there's a sort of a cachet, you know, that some natural wines and some slightly different styles are not being certified VQA. And so I think probably there's a bit of movement away.
Okay. When you talk about natural wine, is there a lot of movement there? I expect the climate is a bit cold.
There is natural wine. There's certainly a lot of orange wines and so on to being made. It's not a question of the climate so much. It's just a question of the market, you know, whether mm-hmm. there's a lot of market for these kinds of wines. But there is, I think there is. It's a small market, perhaps, but there are a number of restaurants in Vancouver and Toronto and Montreal and so on that have wine lists that are predominantly what you would call natural wines of one kind or another.
Okay, and it's interesting. In the book, it says that in the first part, you say that Canada is the second largest country in the world, but it produced the 1% of wine in the world.
It's very small production. I think I say it's the same as Slovakia and or Macedonia, which we don't think of as very big wine producers. No, we produce a very small amount of wine, and most of it is sold on the Canadian market. There are some exports, of course, but they're quite small.
Because the climate is marginal and you need to have a mitigating system near, like a lot of the region are near the lakes.
Water is very important. So in Ontario, the main wine regions are either on Lake Ontario or Lake Erie, you know, which are two of the Great Lakes. In the east, in Nova Scotia, it's the Atlantic is very important, and it's inlets. And then in British Columbia, it's either the Pacific area or inland, it's Lake Okanagan and smaller lakes to the south of Lake Okanagan, which are absolutely critical for grape production.
Okanagan meaning is the main region in British Columbia.
Correct.
And they produce very different style of wine from the counterpart of Ontario. How?
Well, the climates are very different. I mean, Ontario is really a cool climate region. I mean, it's a combination of continental and a sort of bit of maritime, but it's really cool climate, even though it can be very hot. I mean, as I'm talking to you, it's 31 degrees at the moment, so it can get very hot. But during the growing season, for the most part, it's cool, lots of sunshine. But in British Columbia, you know, there's a big range of climatic conditions, from the islands, which can be quite cool and wet, to Okanagan, the valley of the Okanagan, of Lake Okanagan, the Okanagan Valley, is sort of cool and wet in the north. But when you get to the south, it's dry and very warm. And that part of the Okanagan Valley actually has a desert in the south, once you get to the American border, it's actually a desert. So that area produces a lot of very big red wines, a lot of Syrah, Cabernet, Merlot, and so on, Bordeaux blends, other red blends. So we know when you look at Canada as a whole, it has the conditions to grow a wide range of wines, from, you know, cooler varieties, the Rieslings, lovely Chardonnays, Gamays, and Pinot Noir, for example, and then lighter but very quite acidic whites on the East Coast and the Atlantic, where it's cool, and then when you get to the southern part of the Okanagan Valley, you've got these very big, robust red wines. So it's a very good country in that respect. It's got a nice wide range of things. But also bear in mind, it's a big country, from east to west. I mean, it's 6,000 kilometers, and it's not easy to move wine in those great distances.
Yes, and this is not commonly found yet around the world. It's still, as you said, a lot of the consumption is done internally, and I think, as you said, the most of the exportation was done for ice wine, and that's the main market. And do you see that still wine are catching up on as production levels?
Well, I mean, the main export is still ice wine, you know, which sells very well in Asia, in China especially, but also in the United States and elsewhere. I mean, it's a very big product for duty-free stores, because it's, you know, it's a luxury product that's, you know, quite expensive. I mean, in in Ontario, a half bottle of ice wine, 375 millimeters, will cost $60, $70, $80, which is, two or three times the price of a good bottle of table wine. So that's still a very important export. And the exports of still wines and sparkling wines is very, very small. I mean, there's exports to the UK, some to China, other parts of Europe, United States, but it's very much an activity of individual wineries who are building export markets. I mean, there is a group of wineries in British Columbia that's promoting exports of their wines, but it's quite small.
Okay, and quantity wise, do you see there's a more production of still wine in Canada? There is quantity.
I mean, there's good production, and there's certainly room for more exports. But these wines are going to be quite expensive. I mean, volume is very small. Production costs are relatively high because salaries are high, and the costs of making wine can be fairly high in Canada. So I just don't expect to see, vast volumes of Canadian wine anywhere outside Canada.
I can imagine also the site of production, they can't be massive as other countries because of...
No. Most wines are very, very small. Most wineries, very, very small. There are 600 wineries in Canada. And, when you look at the area of land, it's not very big either. So you've got wineries with just a few hectares of vine. So production at many of these places, and some of the best wineries, production is very, very small.
And when we're talking about Ontario, you were talking about I think when I was reading the book, it was interesting to see all the different styles they produce in one region, which is the Niagara Peninsula. And there is a beautiful diagram in the book showing all the airflow. And how can it diversify so much from like a still red wine, some Cabernet Franc being produced, to ice wine in such a small region?
Yeah, there is some variation in the region. Some areas are just warmer. And you can see, if you have a temperature gauge on your car, you can actually drive from one end of the Niagara Peninsula wine region to the other, and you can see like a 4-degree difference from one end to the other, depending on the day. But the ice wine is obviously it depends on getting down to sub-zero temperatures in November, December, January. But for the rest, the temperatures are pretty good for white wines, especially. So Riesling and Chardonnay would be the core white wines. And then for the reds, you're looking at cooler varieties that need perhaps a shorter growing season. So we'd be looking at Pinot and Pinot Noir and Gamay, and that's why Cabernet Franc is successful, because it just ripens that much earlier than Cabernet Sauvignon. They've been growing Cabernet Sauvignon in Niagara for decades, but it doesn't ripen every year.
Okay,
and it might ripen one year in three or four, and so Cabernet Franc is so successful simply because it ripens well just about every year.
Yeah, so I imagine there's a lot of vintage variation between year to year, so to have the right quality.
Well, that's right. Now, I think I say in the book that the concept of an average year doesn't make any sense in Ontario, because it can be very hot or it can be very cold. You get frosts that kill, 50% of the vines in some regions, and then you'll have a heavy rainfall, a very wet summer, then you have a very dry summer. And so it's very, very volatile. So it's vintage variation is really, really important. And when you're buying Ontario wine, you really want to know the vintages. because you want to make sure that you've got a wine that will have ripened, where the grapes will have ripened properly.
And there's coming out a lot of wine from Canada that are sparkling wines, and it's making quite a lot of very good sparkling wines.
Very good, excellent sparkling wines. I think it's one of the strengths of Canadian wine, and that's true of British Columbia and Ontario, but especially Nova Scotia, because Nova Scotia is not known as a wine producing province, and people will have heard of Niagara Peninsula and the Okanagan Valley, for example, but no one really will have heard very much of Nova Scotia wines. But and there aren't very many wineries. There are only like 20 odd wineries in Nova Scotia, but more than half of them are making sparkling wine. And it's because it's a cool area, and so they can pick grapes that are a little underripe with very high acidity, and they can make really fantastic sparkling wines. So it's very good.
Now Nova Scotia is on the eastern side.
That's right,
up northern Atlantic.
On the Atlantic. That's right.
And what grape are they using?
Well, some of them are using hybrid grapes, but many are now moving to conventional varieties, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and so on.
There's some sparkling wine that are coming out and that are produced with a residual a bit of ice wine in it.
Yes, in Ontario there are a couple of wineries that are giving a dosage of ice wine to their sparkling wines, and so it produces a wine with a little bit of sweetness to it. Clearly there's a market for that. There are people who like a little sweetness in wine, but I mean it's not common. But
Canada is, in as you said, most of the 700 wineries in the book, and 500 of them are from early 2000, so really only 20 years, and they see this interest and a lot of experimentation, I imagine, new regions. What regions are you seeing that are doing well?
Well, climate change is making a bit of an impact, as it is everywhere. It's possible to go a little further north than wineries used to go. Most of the wineries in Canada are between about 42 and 50 degrees, but there are some now new wine regions north of the Lake Okanagan, north of Okanagan Valley. There are about three or four wine regions up there that were just recognized in the last year or two. And now north of the city of Toronto, in the Georgian Bay area, there are some wineries being developed there as well. So we'll see how they work out.
And they do.
Yeah, I mean it's a work in progress. And Quebec, we haven't talked much about Quebec, but Quebec is a very big province, and it has a lot of wineries. It has more than 100 wineries, but it makes a very, very small amount of wine. And we're seeing the emergence of a number of quite good wineries there, mainly Chardonnay and Pinot Noir again. But again, with climate change, the projections are that within 20 years, 30 years, they'll be able to grow Chardonnay and Pinot regularly. They'll probably have to bury the vines in the winter, the same as they do now. But it could be a pretty, pretty important region.
Yes, as you said, they have to bury the vines in the winter because it gets like -30, -40 degrees.
Yeah, yeah.
And I imagine it's a quite labor jobs, Dutch.
Well, yeah, they have to do that in Ontario as well, in the Prince Edward County region, which is the most northerly region, wine region in Ontario. They have to bury them. I mean, it was done with soil, just burying the vines with soil. Now they're using geotextiles, thermal blankets, basically, to cover the vines, and then if you get a good covering of snow is a very good insulation against it doesn't seem to make any sense, but snow is a very good insulation against cold.
Yeah.
And so if you get the, you know, the either dirt and then, or a thermal blanket, and then, you know, you get snow on top of that, it's pretty good. And things survive. But it is, it's labor intensive, it's expensive.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, you've got to, that has to be built into the price of the wine.
Exactly. I don't expect the Canadian wines to come out in the market for entry level price. They're quite difficult to find, and Canadian made wines especially.
Well, that's the problem. That's one of the problems with the domestic market for Canadian wine, is that, you know, it's very hard to find a Canadian wine under about, you know, in our terms, about $13 or $14 or more. And if you're looking at, you know, premium high quality wines, you'll easily pay $30-$40 for a bottle of wine. But it's quite possible to buy, you know, very good wine from Chile, from Argentina, from Australia perhaps, but also from Italy and Spain and Portugal, mm-hmm. at much, much lower prices. So it's a bit of a hard sell to get people to buy Canadian when you know, they can look at, you know, other wines that look just as good and, you know, cost less.
What do you think makes separate Canadian wines to other wine regions in the wine country?
I think Canadian wines on the whole are very good. And I think there are some outstanding Canadian wines. I drink a lot of Canadian wine myself. And I was away for the weekend, and we drank only Canadian sparkling wine. And then mm-hmm. quite a bit of Pinot Gris from British Columbia and Ontario, and then some reds, some Pinot Noir. And I think they're very good. I mean, they just have. I don't know how distinctive they are, but you know, they're good balance, nice, very nice acidity, good flavors, everything you're looking for in a good wine, and. You know, I think they just hold up well against many wines from other countries.
As you said earlier, there is a big difference between the west side and the eastern side, the diversity and different grapes growing and different side. What is the biggest problem for, like, production in Canada? Like, what?
Well, I don't think there are any real problems for production. I mean, there are some disease issues. And so on. If you talk to producers, of course, they'll tell you that there are thousands of reasons. They say they think they pay too much tax, too many regulations, and so on. But you know, I think wineries that produce good wine will do quite well. And I mean, one of the problems that people deal with is the fact that it's difficult to move wine from one part of the country to another. For example, if you live in Ontario, where I do, I can't order wine from a winery in British Columbia. It's illegal for them to ship wine to me. So that's one thing. There isn't there's no national wine market. I think there's also we need a national wine law. There is this wine law in Ontario, British Columbia, Quebec, and Nova Scotia, but there's no national wine law. And I think it would help to have a Canadian wine law. And I, you know, there are attempts to do it and they failed. And I think they need to make try again, because I just think it would help.
And a unified front in the world. Was in Ontario, the VQA, they diversified different parts, and they created different sub-regions for different kind of, which was news for me that I learned from the book.
Yeah, there are a lot of sub-appellations in Ontario, especially in Niagara Peninsula. There are a lot of sub-appellations, and they decided to do that simply because wineries were starting to label their wines with names that looked like sub-appellations. So those sub-appellations could be a bit confusing, I think, to a lot of people, to a lot of consumers who don't necessarily know where the wine is from. But now British Columbia is also creating a lot of sub-appellations as well. That they may you know run into the same kinds of problems. It depends what the wine. I mean, a lot of wineries will simply label their wine by the large region. It's like California. A lot of California producers just say California. They don't say Alexander Valley or Lodi or anything like that. Just California, because everyone knows where California is. Whereas if you have a consumer who looks at Lodi and doesn't know what it means, then that's not very helpful. So if you've got a good brand like California, it pays to put that on there. And so Niagara Peninsula is something that's known, and so Okanagan Valley is known. So a lot of producers just simply decide to use those appellations.
As you say, that the two leading regions are British Columbia and Okanagan on the west. And Rod, thank you so much for your information today.
My pleasure.
Is anything you'd like to add?
I think the wind is in the sails of the Canadian wine industry. I think it has immense potential to become quite well known. But there's always the main limiting thing is it's a very small industry. And there's no way that they can actually make a big splash on the international wine world with big volume. So it's always going to be a sort of a niche product on international markets. And there's no way that Canada is going to compete with France or California or anything like that. But it's small, but it's interesting, I think, and it's a really, really fine wine that's being made.
And before I go, how do people can reach you if they want to reach to you? That's my duty.
I have a website. It's called rodphillipsonwine.com, and there's a contact page there. Rodphillipsonwine.com. Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Rod Phillips.
Mathieu, good to see you.
Thank you. You joined the conversation with Rod Phillips on Looking Into Wine. If you enjoyed learning about Canadian wine, I would suggest reading Rod's book, The Wines of Canada. Also, be sure to go on mattiascarpazza.com and remember to join our mailing list now to receive the latest news and projects that are coming up. If you like the podcast, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friend to subscribe. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartMusic, and every major listening apps, as well as at mattiascarpazza.com, where you can listen the podcast freely and earlier. A special thanks to today's guest, Rod Phillips, music produced by Saruele Di Nardo and audio edited by Tommaso Ascoli.